Hello again. This is Jay Abraham. I'm here with my interview partner, Rich Sheffrin. Hello, Rich.
Hi, Jay.
This is going to be a very provocative and a very, very meaningful panel. Today's panel's title is The Greatest Overlooked Leverage in Any Business. And the subtitle, and it's a really important subtitle, is Leading and Leveraging Your Team to Stunning and Sustaining Growth. Every word in that subtitle is relevant. And the key to this today, we've got a collection of experts literally to die for. We've got a world renowned group of people, and they are all keenly focused, laser focused, in fact, on one key element of business that really separates the men from the boys, that separates the wheat from the chaff, that distinguishes the also rans from the literally superlative and magnificent achievers. And what it is focusing literally on becoming a spectacular leader. And it really doesn't matter, surprisingly, whether at this juncture you're a one-person business, a three-person business, a business that deals mostly with outsourced providers, a business with 10 employees, 100 employees. The key to your growth, the key to your competitive strength, the key to you working less and achieving many times more is going to be your ability to literally collaborate and motivate the achievements, the passions, the abilities, the creativity of others. And it's a really it's a very distinctive skill set that and a business ability that most of us don't think very clearly about. But today your thoughts will be clarified, your mind will be immensely refocused, your paradigm will be shifted, and we're about to ratchet your business achievements up many, many rungs. With that stated, I'm going to begin. The way we're going to do it is I'll introduce three of the panelists, and then I'll have Rich introduce the next three. So the first panelist is a very dear friend of mine. I've known him for 20 years, and I can't say enough about him, but I can't say even enough more about what he's done in his remarkable life. His name is Brian Tracy. Most people know the name. He's written so many books, I don't even think he can count, 30 perhaps. They span about every facet of business improvement, of personal achievement, of profit growth. He is the consummate expert in the business arena. And his greatest skill is probably, besides his immensely vast and encompassing knowledge of all these specialties and expertises, is his ability to, in a very, very quick, no-nonsense, highly compressed way, bring everything right down to the core essence. And he just is the most remarkable man in this arena, and you'll see so and why in just about 3 minutes. The next is another dear friend of mine, Fran Tarkenton. Fran is a Hall of Fame football legend. He went to the Super Bowl 2 times, but that's not what distinguishes him for this panel, although his skills at leading his team, at orchestrating incredible sports successes, was certainly a foundation. But when he retired from football, that's when he really started getting into his own. He's created over 10 businesses, separate businesses, diverse businesses, all from scratch, all self-financed. He made them all cash flow positive within about 60 days. He has sold the majority of them and just operates a couple of them now. He's gotten hundreds of millions of dollars from it. He is probably one of the most no-nonsense, bottom-line, straightforward thinkers about what makes a business prosper, grow, and really sustain itself. And you're going to love listening to his, you know, really right-to-the-bottom-line, core essence ideas, and they're very consistent with leadership and focus. The last person I'm going to introduce is quite a remarkable man also. He was named by one of the most prestigious organizations in Europe as one of the top 50 most influential authorities in the business world. His name is Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, and not unsurprisingly, he too has written 24, count them, two dozen seminal books. Most people can't write one dozen or one. He's written two dozen. I think he's working on another one. And they're all in the focus or on the focus of changing the thinking and landscape of an entrepreneur or a business owner. He gets into coaching executives to interact with their team at such a heightened level that the business starts multiplying and multiplying and the achievement starts growing and growing. He, too, is a no-nonsense, but he's going to focus your mind in some paradigms and some areas I know I've never thought about because Rich and I have had some really delightful pre-interview discussion with him, and when we put the phone down, we go, wow, he took us to an area we've never thought about. Anyhow, those are the three I'm introducing, and now on to you, Rich, and you can introduce the other three.
Thanks, Jay. Okay, so our next expert is Jeffrey Pfeffer, and his resume reads like a who's who of about everything meaningful in the business achievement world. He's a professor of organizational behavior at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University. He's written 12 books, and he's now writing his 13th. He's been a regular columnist for some of the most important technology magazines, and I'm going to share with you the title of his last four books because Jay and I think that the understanding and the direction of his work, his research, and his thinking will really set the stage for the quality of the answers that he will be coming up with on this interview. So the latest is called What Were They Thinking? Unconventional Wisdom About Management. The book before that, Hard Facts, Dangerous Half-Truths, and Total Nonsense. Profiting from Evidence-Based Management. The previous book was The Knowing-Doing Gap, How Smart Companies Turn Knowledge into Action. And the book prior to that was Managing with Power, Politics and Influence in Organizations. Jeffrey has graciously agreed to do something that's a little bit tricky for him because his normal focus is helping bigger corporations and enterprises and organizations really get some clarity, some sobriety, and some really high performance improvement with their team, with their management, and with their leadership. But for this panel, he's agreed to help torque down his answers and focus them on the entrepreneur. Next, we have Joseph Graney. And he's a partner and a co-founder of the same firm that we talked about in another panel, Vital Smarts. I really love that name. I think we all need more Vital Smarts. Joseph is an internationally acclaimed keynote speaker and a business strategist of the highest magnitude. He's been designing major corporate change initiatives for the last 25 years. Before that, he was formerly president of California Computer Corporation. He was a senior executive at the Covey Leadership Center, and probably what most impresses myself and Jay is his New York Times bestseller, Influencer, The Power to Change Anything, and two other books, Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When the Stakes Are High, and Crucial Confrontations, Tools for Resolving Broken Promises, Violated Expectations, and Bad Behavior. And then last, we have, but certainly not least, we have Sam Deep. Now, Sam is one of the leading executive leadership coaches in the entire country. His clientele reads like a who's who, basically, of anyone that you can think of in corporate America, from Alcoa to the American Institute of Banking, American Society of Association Executive, Cutler Hammer, Deloitte Touche, Hallmark, Heinz, PP&G. He's written 15 different books, sold over a million copies. They've been translated into 14 languages. But what Jay and I love best about Sam's work is that they're not general, abstract, or theoretical. They have enormously focused lists on what to do, how to do it, why to do it, and what it's going to have the biggest impact in all those categories. Some of his books are called Smart Moves. Next one is What to Say to Get What You Want. Yes, You Can. And he's got so many other books, but in order not to waste time, let's just dive in and thank you all, the panelists, for agreeing to be on this call. And, Jay, back to you for the first question.
Thanks, Rich. Brian, hello, welcome.
Thank you, Jay.
Here's the question. We believe that small to medium-sized entrepreneurs do not even come close to appreciate the importance, the leverage, and the necessity of being a leader in their smaller enterprise. Sure, they understand and grasp the importance in a big corporation and for heads of state and military leaders, but it may not be as tangible or evident to them. So can you present the best reason why entrepreneurs must evolve their leadership capabilities, plus the downside to them if they don't?
Oh, wonderful. The great challenge with leadership, is, especially in business, is that most people back into entrepreneurship. And they back into entrepreneurship, it's like falling in a shark pond. They suddenly are scrambling to make enough money to survive. And whatever they say, as the twig is inclined, the tree is bent. So in other words, as people start off, they sometimes become like that for the rest of their careers. They're just scrambling to get results. But when you become a leader, one of the most important things you do is realize that other people are looking up to you. In order to be a leader, you have to have other people. And Jim Collins, in his book Good to Great, always asks the question, why aren't you already a great company? Why aren't you already a great company? And this is what leaders do. Leaders have a specific quality. There's been 3,300 studies on leadership over the ages to find out what the qualities of top leaders are. And the number one quality in common from all 3,300 studies is vision, is they have a very clear vision of who they are. They understand their strengths and weaknesses, and they're very honest with themselves. They understand that they may be good at selling but not good at accounting. They may be good at administration, but they may not be good at manufacturing. So leaders are very honest with themselves, strengths and weaknesses. The second thing is they have a very clear vision of where they want to go with their business. And Peter Drucker says that if you don't see yourself as building a world-class company, even though you're starting off on your kitchen table, you'll never really fulfill your potential. So one of the things I encourage leaders to do is always to idealize and say, if my business was ideal in every way sometime in the future, what would it look like? And then you ask this in several things. You ask this, first of all, if my products and my services were ideal, if they were the best in the market, they were the most respected, what would they look like? How would they function? What kind of results would they get from my customers? If my business was ideal, what markets would I go into? And how would I go into those markets? If my business was ideal, what kind of people would I have? How would I attract them? How would I keep them? How would I treat them? And if I was ideal, if I was the very best person I could possibly be, what is my vision for myself and my future as a leader of this company?
Great answer, Brian. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jay. Pleasure to be with you.
Sam, what do you think?
I think of three things. First of all, great leadership begets great followership. And entrepreneurs who create great followers buy their lives back. Any entrepreneur knows you're working constantly, and to find time with family, time to take your vacations and reduce your stress is sometimes very difficult to do. And the better the people are who follow you, the more you can do those kinds of things. A second thought I have is that Peter Drucker once said that leadership is too important to put in the hands of one person. And I think by that he meant that there's no way for that all the great ideas that there are for running your business more profitably are in your head. You know, there's an old Italian proverb that says the Pope and the peasant, no more between them than the Pope alone. And, you know, and when you pull the peasants in, you know, you just get better decisions, and again, you're incredibly more effective. And then we have to consider the current time we're in. You know, and more than any other time, I think, in our economic lifetimes, employees are looking for hope in the future. And I think back to how Rudy Giuliani, remember the pictures of Rudy Giuliani walking the streets of New York City with a handkerchief over his mouth, and how that helped the nation recover. That sign of leadership helped the nation recover emotionally from the scars of 9/11.
Sure.
By that inspiring leadership, he was there, and that leadership truly made a difference.
Very good answer, Sam. Rand, give us the entrepreneur's perspective.
You got to define leadership. Let me tell you, I used to believe that big corporate chairmen and presidents were the smartest, best business people in the world. And years ago, I figured out they weren't. And if we now have all the evidence that we need that they aren't, because they have crashed all these great companies. And I'm going to suggest to you a theory. They didn't start the companies in most of the cases. They were hired guns to come in, been to the Harvard Business Schools, been to the Stanford Business Schools, got all the theory. But they didn't have the core thing that you need to have to exercise leadership. And you can't fake it. You can't learn it in a classroom. It comes from caring about your product, believing in your product and service, and then caring about the people that are producing the product and are your business partners and are part of your team, and then you show that you really care about the customer or the prospect, that you are giving that customer products and services that have great value. If you don't have that core belief system and you don't care about that, you cannot exercise leadership.
Good answer. Jeffrey, first question.
Sure. The first answer, I mean, I think the answer has a number of parts. If you think leadership matters in a big organization, it matters even more in smaller organizations. You know, a friend of mine who used to be a senior executive at General Electric said, you know, everybody gives Jack Welch a lot of credit, but after all, the company was already 100 years old and he had 70,000 other people to help him. In the small and medium-sized enterprise, you don't have the infrastructure of a General Electric and you don't have the history of General Electric, and therefore it really, the performance of the company comes very much down to what the individual leading that organization does. And you can see that in the small units in the military. You can see that in Roald Amundsen's race to the North Pole when he ran and raced against an English team that did not prepare and did not have good leadership, and as a consequence, the English team actually suffered casualties. So the smaller the organization, the bigger the impact of the leader, because there's nothing to buffer you. So that's item number one. Item number two, the smaller organization lives in a much more precarious state. You know, if you're General Motors, maybe the United States government will help you out. And certainly if you're Citibank or Bank of America, the United States government will help you out. For the people who are listening to this, Jay and Rich, nobody's going to help them out. And so, therefore, it really becomes up to them to do the things that will make their organization successful. And otherwise, there's going to be no bailout. There's nothing really to help them except their own resources. And everybody has seen, and certainly the people listening to this have seen, the upsides and the downsides of dealing with a small or enterprise where there is a good organizational culture and where the leaders are effective, and the ones where they're not. And, you know, the downside, I think, of bad leadership is even bigger a problem than the upside is potentially a good thing, because you know, with bad or ineffective leadership, you can drive out great employees, you can drive away your customers, and basically drive yourself into the ditch.
Great answer, Jeffrey. Thank you. Joseph, is an honor and a delight to have you here.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's an honor to be a part of a panel like this.
Okay.
Once you've articulated a solution and created a little enterprise around that, all the rest of the growth comes from leadership. And one of the problems that most entrepreneurs have is they don't even understand what leadership is. Leadership is intentional influence. Leadership is about influencing the behavior of others. So sitting in a room by yourself thinking about what customers need is not leadership. That may be entrepreneurship. But your second job after articulating one of the unique things that you can do as an organization is to build a team around delivering that solution, selling it, servicing it, manufacturing it, doing the back office work, and that is exclusively the province of leadership. Your challenge is to influence the behavior of the other two people, three people, 30 people, you name the number, in your organization so that they're consistently adding value in your organization. You know, quick example, there's an organization in our area that I think is just a supreme example of entrepreneurship. It's called Cafe Rio. They make customized burritos. You know, talk about an overserved segment of the market, the burritos. You know, they didn't invent anything new. But what the people who started Cafe Rio understood was if they had an intentional influence strategy, if they really focused on leadership so that they created an employee population that was faster, cleaner, friendlier than anybody else's, then they could differentiate themselves from the rest of the market. I'm telling you, Jay, you can't get close to these restaurants anytime after 4:30 in the afternoon, or you'll be standing in a line of 100 people. And the reason that they're different than anybody else is because the founders of this organization put the vast majority of their time and effort after opening the doors on influence.
Good answer, Joseph. Marshall, thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Question one.
Number one, agree completely with your idea that people in the space of the small and entrepreneurial world, number one, are leaders, and number two, really need to focus on leadership. An interesting observation that I've made in working in this space is many people in the smaller entrepreneurial space don't even see themselves as leaders at all. They see themselves as idea people, or they see themselves as innovators, or they see themselves as technically gifted. They don't really see themselves as leaders. And the challenge of leadership is that mindset will take you to a certain point, but not much further. With that mindset, you can make it to a certain point just because you're a genius or a technically gifted or you're innovative or creative or even good at sales. If you want to develop a business, you have to be a leader. And as the business grows, leadership is going to become more and more and more important. And you need to be a leader from the get-go. You need to do things that a leader needs to do. You need to recruit great people. You need to develop people. You need to communicate a sense of vision. You need to involve all those people around you. And so I would say the beginning for leadership is the acknowledgement of leadership is not just important for the future of our business. Leadership may be the most critical variable in the future of our business, and acknowledging and accepting that fact. Once you acknowledge and accept that fact, it becomes ludicrous not to focus on developing yourself as a leader because you realize this is who I am. I am a leader, and it is going to be an important part of my identity. After acknowledging and developing the fact that you are a leader, then you can really practice what I teach everyone to do, and that is focus on constant improvement. Let me give you an example of an entrepreneurial leader, one of the best in history, who's a great role model, Michael Dell. And I published an article about this. Michael Dell publicly has received feedback from everyone he works with about his own leadership skills and done it for years. He gets up in front of everybody at Dell, and he gets up in front of everybody on video and says, my name is Michael Dell. I've received feedback. Here's what I feel good about. Here's what I need to improve. I'm going to reach out and ask you to help me get better. Michael Dell doesn't have to say that. He's the world's youngest billionaire. Michael Dell could sit there and say, my name is Michael Dell and yours isn't. And by the way, what's the name of the company? Dell. That'd be my name. That's not your name. Well, what happens to people's respect for Michael Dell when he gets up and acts like a human? It goes up. And one of the reasons Michael Dell has been effective as an entrepreneur who turned himself into a person leading a large company is he is constantly focused on how to improve himself as a leader, and he acknowledges that he is a leader. So that is advice I would have for the small and entrepreneurial leaders around here. The great advice, you are a leader. Acknowledge it. Make it part of your life. Once you do that, it will be ludicrous not to invest in leadership development.
Next question, and this is a great, great starting point. So we've established the better leader you are, the more leverage and greater the success your business achieves. Let's look at the fundamentals of leadership, the four or five or six critical areas an entrepreneur, a smaller or medium-sized business owner, must focus on to be a better leader of their organization and to pilot it to growth and success. Brian, your turn.
The number one job of a leader is to get results. And you must understand this. I become very frustrated when people say, you've got to lead, be a leader, lead, provide leadership. What on earth does that mean? And the answer is that you are the most capable person of getting the most important results that are essential for the survival and thrival of your business. That's it. And if you are not that person, you must be moved aside and quickly and get a leader in there like a commanding officer at war. A business is in a form of warfare all the time. So what are the ways that you get results? Number one, first responsibility of leadership is to set and achieve business goals. And goes back to our word clarity. You must be clear and specific about your goals, especially your financial goals, your sales goals. You must have standards. You must have metrics. You must have measures and you must have deadlines. Clarity, clarity, clarity. Leaders are very specific about these things. The second thing, the second responsibility of leadership is to innovate and market. Peter Drucker, and you guys, we've always worked together for years about the importance of marketing. Peter Drucker said the number one job of a business, purpose of a business, is to create and keep a customer. And the only measure of business success is customer satisfaction. And the only measure of customer satisfaction is repeat business. And if you recognize those three, those are the critical measures. So he said the only two things that lead to customer satisfaction are innovation, finding faster, better, cheaper, easier ways to serve customers, and marketing, finding better, more creative ways to attract people who want to buy your product or service. And companies rise or fall on the basis of their ability to innovate and market. And the leader, the commanding general, is the person who's responsible. They did a survey recently, and they asked them, people in small and medium-sized companies, how important is marketing and sales to you? And they all said, oh, very important, number one, most important of all. And then they said, well, how much time do you spend on marketing and sales? Oh, all the time, all the time, all the time. So then they tracked them for a month with a clipboard and a stopwatch. They found the average so-called leader in a small and medium-sized business spent 11% of their time on sales and marketing. And everything else was consumed with administration and lunches and reading emails and conversations and all kinds of things, but only 11%. And you wonder why companies are in trouble. But if you look at companies that are really moving ahead, like a general driving his army across enemy territory, they are at the forefront. They're the point of the spear in sales and marketing. Now, the third critical responsibility of leadership is to solve problems and make decisions. All of business is a process of solving problems. A goal unmet is a problem unsolved. A sales target unachieved is a problem unsolved. All of business is problem solving, and the mark of the leader is that they are effective at solving problems. Now, the key to being effective at solving problems is something that I've taught all over the world, and is that is to be solution-oriented, is to focus, clarity, be clear about what the problem is, and then focus on the solution. So I can give you several others, but the last critical point in this question is the major job of the leader, and this comes to Tom Peters in Search of Excellence, is to lead by example. I worked with Albert Schweitzer many years ago in Africa, and he taught that you must lead men at the school of example, for they will learn at no other. And the most important thing the most important job of the leader is for the leader to realize that everyone is watching him or her, and everyone is setting their tone and determining how they're going to act and treat other people based on how the leader behaves and treats them.
Very interesting answer. Sam, your turn.
I think the first thing that comes to mind is vision. You know, vision goes back to giving people that hope and direction that I talked about for the future. You know, by showing them the future in the form of where you want them to be, where you want the company to go, what's the tomorrow you want to have them help you create, and what better tomorrow do you want to work in with them? So to give them that future direction, that's the only thing that a leader can't delegate, is the responsibility for pointing the direction over the hill and saying that's where we're going, vision. The second thing that comes to mind, I have five, and the second one is listening. You know, great leaders are great listeners. You know, whether we're listening to people's ideas, to their cares and concerns, or what they need from us personally in the way of resources in order to be as successful as we require them to be. And, you know, great leaders have great ears, no question about that one. And then the third thing I think about is William James is probably the most famous American psychologist of all time. And he once said that the deepest craving in human nature is the desire to be appreciated. And, of course, he was talking about praise. And, you know, Rich, I'm sure you've seen a number of employee surveys as I have. And the number one complaint that I see on those surveys, and at least over half of the employee satisfaction surveys I have seen, is that people say, I don't feel appreciated. And how can they feel that way if you don't say thank you? And it is so hard for so many leaders to say thank you. It's almost like it was coming out of the mouth of Fonzie. Third thing I think about is accountability. I think this is the great corporate disease today, whether we're talking about a company of five or a company of 5 million. It's the same thing everywhere, and I think the greatest challenge that leaders face at all levels, in all sectors, is figuring out how to get the right expectations of people and how to put the right processes in place to make sure that people remain responsible for the results of their work. That one is, we could have an entire conversation just about accountability, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, my fifth one, and it was hard, hard to pick five, but I'm going to pick emotional intelligence. You know, because I really believe that leadership's an inside-out pursuit. And I've coached more than one executive who I had to say to, you know what, I don't think you ought to be a leader. I don't think you're hardwired and softwired well enough to, in the right way to influence people. And I just think you ought to just continue to be a great accountant or a great engineer or a great teacher or a great attorney, whatever you do, and make your contribution there, because you probably have not been equipped well to be a successful influencer of other people. And so when I teach leadership in a corporation, I say, you know what, the first thing we're going to do is learn emotional intelligence, because I think it is the fundamental groundwork of being a great leader.
Good answer, Sam. Fran, what do you think?
Yes. The key to success in life is relationships. Relationships come from trust, that come from caring. Most people in business don't really care about whether their product's good or not as long as it sells. Most people don't care about their customer one way or the other as long as they buy. Most people don't take the time to care about their employees because they're just that. Most people that get powerful positions are all about me and what's in it for me and about my power, and everybody else is below me. Example, one of my great mentors is a guy named Sam Walton. I've got letters on my office walls from Sam Walton. I spent many hours and days and weeks with Sam Walton, but he was just one. I had others that were not as famous as he was, but almost as effective. And these people, nothing was too little for them to do. They were willing to put their hands and their fingers into the ground and into the dirt. They were the rainmakers. They were the ones that inspired the others by their caring for the quality of their product or service, and to be able to continue servicing that customer better and better and better with more value and more value and more value. And they lived it, and they shared that with their people, and they shared it by asking questions of their people. What do you think? How can we make this better? How can we have a better marketing plan?
Thanks, Fran. Your turn, Jeffrey.
I think there are a number of things. The first is that if you ask me, you know, what would I try to imbue in every effective leader, it would be a sense of modesty about what they know and what they don't know. Ego, hubris, is a big problem in organizations of any size. It's actually a problem at the national governmental level as well. So I think the first thing is to understand your limitations. Just as when you go to a doctor, you don't want the doctor to tell you he can fix your problem if he doesn't or she doesn't have a clue as to what they're doing. I think leaders are well served to understand the limits of what they know and what they don't know. And many of them aren't really very, I think, conscious of the limits of their knowledge. Secondly, leadership, I think, or management is involved, entails getting things done through other people. And so that means you have to build the capability of working effectively with others. And this is true for both employees and customers. And I think the skill here is one which I would call empathic understanding. You need to have empathy. I think all of us have had the problems of, you know, calling on a telephone to reach an enterprise or a company and being put on hold and having the automated response system, or dealing with some product or service and we say, why can't we use it? What were they thinking? Why didn't they give me instructions? Why did they make it so hard to deal with this organization and this? So I think that you avoid that by being able to see the world from another person's point of view. I think a third quality that's very important for leaders is to be able to inspire confidence. And that really suggests that not that they tell people stories or that they make up stuff that they don't know, but that they are honest with people and then also give them a sense that they understand how to move the organization forward. And finally, and this is true for an organization of any size, and it's very scarce in today's world, trust. Leaders have to be able to build trust. And the way you build trust most effectively, in my opinion, is by telling people the truth and admitting when you've made a mistake. Because, you know, and not pretending that you know stuff you don't know, because the people working with you will know that you're just telling them stories.
Good answer. Thank you, Jeffrey. What do you think, Joseph?
The question's very well stated, because I think it comes down to just a few very simple things. And I'd simplify it as three. The first is create a monopoly. So your first job is to come up with a concept, a service or product that literally is your monopoly. So in the example I cited earlier of this burrito manufacturer, they have a monopoly. They have a monopoly on clean, fast, friendly. The environment that they create once you come in at the price point that they create it sets them apart from everybody else, and that is their monopoly. The second thing you got to do is build a team around that monopoly. So you'll notice the transition from task one to task two. Task one is maybe something that you'll do sitting by yourself in a room. Task two immediately puts you into the leadership role. You've got to build a team. You've got to get the right personnel on board to be able to deliver the value proposition that you've found. And there are a couple of critical variables in building that team. Number one is hiring, but the second is firing. And most entrepreneurs fall down on the second one. You've got to be willing to remove people from your organization that are not going to help you get to where you need to be. And most people are so reluctant to do that they take about three times longer to let people go than they should have. We all know the point at which it got clear to us that this person is not the right fit. And the gap in time between when you were clear about that and when you took action on it is costing you money every single day. So building a team, not just by finding the right talent, but also by removing those who are taking up space that the right talent ought to occupy, is the second critical task. The third is influencing behavior. So you may have hired the right people, but if you don't have an intentional strategy for shaping the behavior of your people so that they are going to be adding the value, creating the product, delivering the service in the way that differentiates you and establishes your monopoly, then you will fail. Nobody else can do this for you.
I like that answer, Joseph. Marshall, what's your take?
About once every month or so, the entrepreneurial leader needs to sit down with each of his or her direct reports and have a dialogue going over six basic issues. Issue number one is, where are we going? Focused on the vision, the big picture, the organization. And by the way, in a small business, this is more important because things change so rapidly. So start with, where are we going? And then ask the person a question, where do you think we should be going? So rather than just the leader who's telling people what to do and how to do it, you're having a dialogue, and they're learning constantly from this dialogue. Issue number two, where are you going? Sit down with that person and say, where are you and your part of the business going? Here's where I think you should be going. What do you think? So you want to have alignment two ways. One, the big picture and the smaller picture, and two, the leader and the person being led. Number three, doing well. Here's what I think you and your part of the business are doing very well. And then ask the person a question. What are you proud of? See, many entrepreneurs know what they're proud of, but they don't ask the question to the people around them. What are you proud of? And by asking this question, you begin to learn the motivation, the pride, where the enthusiasm is coming from your direct reports. You'll never learn if you don't ask. So the third one is doing well. Number four, suggestions for improvement. And again, as you know, I'm big on coaching. I think the leader should be a coach and sit there and say, here's suggestions for the future I might have for you, some things that might make things even better. And then ask the person a question. Well, it's a great question. If you were the coach for you, what advice would you have? So this way the person starts thinking like a coach. And one of my good clients told me, he said, you know, I'm amazed by asking this question, the depth and wisdom I get in terms of answers. And then the fifth question is, how can I help? See, this is one question entrepreneurial leaders don't ask enough. How can I help you do a great job? They often ask, here's what you can do to help me. But they don't do a whole lot of, here's what can I do to help you? How can I be a more, and then finally, how can I be a more effective leader? How can I be a more effective manager? How can I more effectively run this organization?
And okay, now you've listed them. Let's describe, if you will, define, and animate what it looks like when it's done right. Dimensionalize great leadership in the entrepreneurial realm so people can not just say, well, those sound great. Show them what it would look like when it's put into action. Brian, questions to you.
Well, then that takes us back to my first definition of leadership, is leadership is the ability to get the results expected. Fortune magazine was looking at the fact that an enormous number of Fortune 500 presidents have been fired and replaced by their boards. starting from IBM and Ford and General Motors and Kodak and Xerox and so on. And they went back and they interviewed top people and they said, why? The number one reason was failure to execute. Failure to execute. In other words, the person didn't get the job done. And they had to be replaced quickly by someone who could get the job or the company would collapse. The number one reason that companies succeed is because they have good leadership. Number one reason why they fail is because they have poor leadership. So to dimensionalize this, the leader must be very, very clear about the results he or she is attempting to get. The leader must be clear about how every single person contributes to those results. The leader must go forward.
Great answer, Brian. Sam, what's your answer?
What I've been doing with my clients to bring vision alive is to say, let's throw away your 40-word statement that has seamless and world-class in it, or supplier of choice, or other meaningless terms, and let's just replace it with one single strong statement that points us all in the direction of creating something we don't have now. And I do this with a lot of my clients, but you know, the best one I ever heard is not one that I or any of my clients created. A number of years ago, Nike had one. And Nike's one thing was crush Reebok. Now, if you think about that, you know, Jay, if you were working for me, I could walk over to your desk and say, Jay, what'd you do today to crush Reebok?
Yeah.
That meeting you went to, what happened there to crush Reebok? So that's how to bring vision alive. Just find one thing and point your team toward it. And this is great, by the way, down at a team level or down at a small business level. Let's jump over to listening. A real simple thing here. One thing we need to do as leaders is keep people talking and listen to them. And let me tell you the best way to do it. This is going to sound silly, but a smile, a half a smile and raised eyebrows. It's called an open face. If you lift those eyebrows a bit, put a little half smile on your face, it's amazing how people will share with you, how they will tell you things that they would never tell you otherwise. And once people tell you something, they feel closer to you. The great way to build intimacy is by allowing people to share important things with you. And that's great when a leader can do that. And praise, this is even simpler than the first two. What I would suggest that all our listeners do is put three names on a sheet of paper, the names of three people who you pledge to catch in the act of victory this week and say thank you to. Simple as that. Accountability? I'm willing to go so far as to say you don't have accountability if you don't have a three-step process. Step one in the process is to create individual performance goals with your people. Individual, with each person. What are you going to accomplish this year? Meet quarterly. Step two, meet quarterly with each one of them. Review progress on those goals. And step three, measure their accomplishment at the end of the year with positive and negative consequences resolving. I know a lot of companies do the individual goals, even some that do the review progress, but very few that have consequences at the end. And when you have that three-stage process, you really have a really tight rein of accountability. Emotional intelligence is, as you might guess, is the hardest one to put texture on. But I would just simply tell people this. Get an assessment of your emotional intelligence. Learn what's inside of you that's moving you and your people forward and what's inside of you that's holding you back. And there are many opportunities to do that. In fact, you can actually go online and do a free emotional intelligence assessment. I have an all-day program that I run, and people go through it. And at the end, they identify their one greatest emotional strength and their one greatest emotional need in order to get better. But that has to begin by, to know ourselves, disease is half our cure.
Great perspective. Thank you. Fran, give us your no-nonsense take on this.
Great leadership shows itself when you're willing to work 24/7, you're willing to be there later and earlier than everybody else, that you show by how you act, what you say, the respect you treat your people on how much you care about them. There was a great study done by the Atlantic Monthly for the last 70 years on the graduating class of Harvard in 1942. You know who's in that class, Jay? Ben Bradley, the famous editor of the Washington Post. JFK, I don't need to tell you who JFK is. And that whole class, think about 1942. They said in that class of 42, you had to not only be smart, you had to be privileged. You had to have money to get to Harvard. They studied those people for the next 70 years, see how they did.
Okay.
The study came out, most of them crashed and burned. Privileged, smart, highly educated, crashed and burned. And the few that made it through there, the one thing they had is that they understood the secret to success and happiness in life was relationships that came from trust, that came from caring. When leadership can lead by example, by caring, by innovation, the leader of a company has to show that passion and belief system and also has to be the rainmaker. They have to be driving innovation. They have to be driving that. They cannot delegate here and delegate there and have a committee here and have a committee there. They've got to have their hands in the soil. And when that is seen by their associates or the people that work with them, those people are inspired to do great work.
Good answer, Fran. Your turn, Jeffrey.
Well, I think what you have to do, I mean, I think small and medium-sized enterprises actually have or ought to have an advantage over larger enterprises, and it's interesting to me that sometimes they don't seize on this advantage. If I'm running a big company, it is relatively easy for me to get out of touch with both the frontline people. I know department store executives who go visit their department stores and don't even talk to the frontline staff, and also to get out of touch with the customers. There's an airline CEO who, believe it or not, flew to a meeting discussing a merger on a private jet because I guess he wanted to get there on time. So you would think that the SME leaders would be really well situated because potentially they are much more in contact with all of their employees and certainly much more in contact on a daily basis with their customers. So then the question becomes, how do you actually spend your time? Do you spend your time in the office, or do you spend your time just talking to people who you like or who agree with you, or do you really seek out the employees who you say, why in the hell did I hire that person? You know, because they're making me uncomfortable, but that doesn't matter because oftentimes you get new ideas by talking to people who have a different perspective than you have. And do you spend, and are you spending sufficient time out and about with your customers and with the people buying your product or service, whatever that is? Are you really in touch, if you will, with the marketplace? And by the way, do you understand what your competitors are doing? What's interesting to me is that everybody normally has pretty good conversations with their friends and family. And then we call them a leader or head of a company, and all of a sudden their ability to have those same levels of conversation somehow disappears. And if they would just reclaim that ability that they have in these other spheres, they'd be much better off.
Great answer, Jeffrey. Thank you. Joseph, your turn.
Yeah, I'll take each of these. So create a monopoly, build the team, and then influence behavior. So create the monopoly. It's important that you understand that it doesn't matter if there are people in your market category somewhere. What matters is you have a way of describing what you do better and differently than anybody else. If you want to encounter entrepreneurship in its rawest form, the best way to do that is in the slums in the third world. That's where I was last week, Jay. And as I walk through these 10-by-10 rusted tin shacks, you encounter entrepreneurs in each of them, entrepreneurs who know at the end of the day if they don't rack up a profit of a few pennies, they won't eat.
Yep.
So I talked to this one woman, a woman by the name of Marie, who has a monopoly. She's quintupled her income in the past few months because she came up with a product category that we named for her the Cluck Pop. It's not the most attractive product, but let me just describe it to illustrate this point. She found that people who are slaughtering chickens would throw away the heads. She got the heads for free. She found they didn't have a lot of value for the guts. She got the guts. She found that these hens who had half gestated an egg, they had this half-gestated egg inside. She got those for free. She was able to get potatoes cheaply. She bought herself a pot, and she cooks all of this, stuffs it into the neck of this decapitated chicken, sews up the end, and then boils all of that and creates a little walk-away product that people can eat that has high nutritional value, high protein content in the slum for 12 cents per pop. Nobody makes any of these. Nobody's thought of this. Nobody's looked around and found that you could assemble all of these cast-off pieces of a chicken and create a product. And she has 100% markup in it and has no competitors. She's able to sell every single one of what we call the cluck pops out by 6 o'clock every day and is able to multiply by 5 the income of her family as a result of that. She's going places. And that's what entrepreneurs do. They find a segment that has not been served as well as they know how they could do, and they create a monopoly. The second thing you got to do is build the team. I mentioned that the critical behavior there is your willingness to remove people that aren't working. And I think the example I'd share with you is our own company. We've been together 20 years now, and the most important inflection points in the growth of our company have been times when we needed to remove, in particular, a senior leader in the organization, somebody who'd been in for a few months or sometimes as long as a year, that it was clear we're not going to be able to perform the way they needed to. Now, the challenge is these people had become friends. We knew their children. We knew their families. And learning how to gracefully, respectfully, and lovingly separate from somebody is critical, not just so that you retain your humanity, but also so that you communicate to the rest of your staff that you care for and respect people, but also are willing to make the tough choices in the benefit of the larger team. Your job is to benefit the entire enterprise, and that's how you have to make those decisions. So building a team and making tough personnel choices is a critical piece of that. And finally is the influence challenge. I was with the chief operating officer of Chick-fil-A. They're a wonderful entrepreneurial organization because every one of their franchises is run by an independent operator. And they know that their job is to influence the 40 to 60 staff in this store in order to maintain the quality and the service levels that they need to continue to bring customers in. When I talked to this chief operating officer, he said his greatest challenge is the frontline employee who between 2 and 3 in the afternoon has to decide whether they're going to lean against their broom or whether they're going to go bus tables and greet people when they walk in. And if you don't have a strategy in your head for how you're going to influence all 50 to 60 of those employees in your store, you will not get the right service levels and quality levels to maintain the margins and maintain the growth that you're after. So these are the three challenges you've got as entrepreneurs.
I like that, Joseph. Marshall, what do you think?
I think what that recipient of the leadership is going to see is a leader who is constantly evolving, a leader who is growing, a leader who is listening, and a leader who is learning. Peter Drucker said the leader of the past knew how to tell. The leader of the future is going to know how to ask. The reason is most entrepreneurial leaders today manage people called knowledge workers. What is a knowledge worker? They know more about that part of the business than the leader does. Well, when you manage people that know technically as much as you do, you can't just tell them what to do and how to do it. You have to ask. You have to listen. You have to learn. You have to involve these people. So I think what great leadership would look like, and again, this is not talking about the strategy or the direction or the big picture of leadership. It's talking about the behavioral dimension. What great leadership would look like to that person being led is a leader who asks, a leader who listens, a leader who learns, a leader who involves people, a leader who coaches, and a leader who innovates, not just a leader who tells people what to do, tells people how to do it, and expects everyone to be a clone of himself or herself. And I was teaching at UC Berkeley recently, and a young MBA student asked me, he said, I read your book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And he said, you never really address the issue of people that have self-confidence problems. What about your clients who have self-confidence problems? And you know what I told him? You're a CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation. You don't have a self-confidence problem. I never met one that had a self-confidence problem. So it's an interesting theoretical question, but these people don't have it. Then I got to thinking, and this goes back to your point, a lot of leaders, though, especially in smaller entrepreneurial business, especially, by the way, those with strong technical backgrounds who don't have a lot of interpersonal skills or interpersonal backgrounds, a lot of them do have confidence issues. Not confidence issues around knowing what they're doing as much, but confidence issues in dealing with people. So some of the suggestions I have, and I wrote a Business Week column about this, in terms of building your confidence are, number one, practice speaking. Look in the mirror, make videos of yourself talking, practice speaking in public, and I think just interacting with people, practice speaking is a very, very positive thing. Second, realize nobody knows everything. And when you're running a small business, you don't know the future, but you need to generate that sense of self-confidence. And I think a great message for entrepreneurial leaders is if you're going to be a leader, it's showtime every day. You look like a leader, you act like a leader, you talk like a leader, you project like a leader. You may feel bad on the inside, but you don't show it on the outside. And by the way, that is not being a phony. That's part of being a professional.
That's great. That was a wonderful answer. Rich?
Okay. Question four. How do you know how your personal leadership level stacks up right now? What do you look at? What criteria to base it on? And how do you really do an objective self-assessment when it comes to your leadership and really analyze the situation correctly? Brian, how would you answer that?
My conclusion, I've given this question a lot of thought, and it really is simple. Good leadership is objectively measured. It's did you make your numbers or not? And there are several numbers in a business which I encourage leaders to look at all the time. And going right back to marketing, the Boston Consulting Group once said that all strategic planning is market planning. And so there's basically several numbers that you measure yourself against. Number one is the number of new leads, the new interested prospects that you're attracting. That is the sum total measure of the effectiveness of all of your advertising and all of your business and all of your product development and all your market positioning is how many people are raising their hands and say, I'm interested in what you're selling. Then the second measure is the number of conversions. The number of conversions of people who say they're interested, how many of them actually convert to customers? And that is very important because the number one reason for business success is high sales. Number one reason for business failure is low sales. And that is the ultimate measure of the leader. Did they take the hill or not? Now, the third measure is the size of each sale. Is what is the actual size of each sale? The fourth measure is the profitability of each sale. How much net profit did we make on each sale? The fifth measure is the profit margin. Are the profit margins increasing or decreasing? And the sixth measure is repeat business. Is how often do our customers repeat, come back and buy from us again, based on the way we treated them when they bought from us the first time. Now, those are all measures that a simple accountant can sit down and calculate and track on a daily basis. Those are called your critical success factors.
Interesting answer, Brian. Sam, it's your turn.
May I suggest that's an oxymoron? It doesn't exist. I really don't believe it's possible to do an objective self-assessment. So let me suggest something that's a little different. And that is that I require all the entrepreneurs that I coach to use an online leadership assessment tool to get feedback from the horse's mouth. That's where you've got to go to your people. I use a particular technique that I think is just great. And my 360 assessment, I have 22 leadership dimensions. And I say, look at these 22 dimensions and tell this person what three are at his top and what three are at his bottom. Because everyone has three at the top, three at the bottom. Everyone has three of the 22 that they perform more reliably, more fully, more gainfully than the other 19, and they have three that they don't do as well. Everyone does, every single person. And all we want to do is identify this person's three at the top, three at the bottom. And when people identify the three at the bottom, I make them say why they put it at the bottom. And this, I think, is the best way to get anything that mirrors an objective assessment. But let's assume that the average entrepreneur is not going to go out and get an assessment. Let me give you a tool. Let's go back to Jack Palance again, stick our finger up in the air. I think the best way to get an honest assessment from anybody is to ask a question for feedback with the word one in it. I call these one-finger questions. See, if you go to your people, and you say, how am I doing as a leader? You know what they're going to say? Oh, boss, you're doing great. You're doing fine. Don't worry about it. If you screw up, we'll tell you. And, of course, they won't. But if you go to your people and say, what's one thing that I could be doing for you that I'm not doing now? If there was one thing I could add to my leadership behavior that you think would help us succeed more, what would that one thing be? If you ask for one thing, you'll often get something.
Great answer, Sam. Fran, it's your turn.
If I have to go and think that through, then I'm not a leader. The problem we have is most people running small businesses are looking for silver bullets. They think that Jay Abraham or Fran Tarkenton have some magic formula that we can give to them to make them work. They're looking for something when somebody, because people promise them, oh, I've got, if you do this, 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 you're going to be, you know, double or triple or quadruple your business. I don't have any silver bullets. Nobody has any silver bullets. Life is about relationships. Business is about relationships. It's about the fundamentals.
Great answer, Fran. Jeffrey, you're up.
Well, I'm a big believer in peer and 360-degree feedback. And though, you know, this sounds like a big company type of thing where you've got to have forms in an HR department, in fact, you don't. You can ask your employees and your customers, for that matter, but certainly your employees and the people you come in contact with, to anonymously provide you a set of, you know, what you're good at, what they think you need improvement at, and take it seriously. I'm on the board of a very small company, which I hope someday will be bigger, with about 25 or 30 employees, and the CEO does that every year. He asks the he asks his employees to provide him some anonymous and honest feedback. What am I good at? What am I bad at? What do I need to work at? And so that's my first and simplest recommendation. Nobody knows you as well as the people who are working with you all the time. And if you free them up to be honest and truthful in a developmental sense with you, you'll never get better information than that. The other thing, of course, I sometimes tell people to do, and you can do this even as a relatively small organization. As a matter of fact, you can do this as an individual. I have individuals who I know who've gone through my class who have assembled a small, in quotes, board of advisors, people who are not working with them or for them, but who are peers, friends, teachers, mentors, people that they know who can provide them the kind of objective advice that you oftentimes only get by sharing information with people who don't have a vested interest in telling you how wonderful you are.
Jeffrey, interesting answer. Joseph, it's your turn.
Yeah, I love how Abraham Lincoln described it. He said, it's not about intention, it's about results. I'm paraphrasing. He said, at the end of the day, if what you did, it didn't get the right result, it wouldn't matter if you had a dozen angels swearing that you were a good guy, you're still going to be a villain. That's how you're going to be perceived. So if you want to find out where you stand, you have to make sure that you are tracking yourself both in terms of financial performance, but also in terms of social capital. Are you building the human side of the business in balance with the financial side of the business? Are you creating an enterprise that is socially rewarding to your customers, to your employees, to your vendors and suppliers? And also, is it netting out in a way that is giving you a great return on your capital investment? So the real question for entrepreneurs is, what's the scorecard that you pay attention to? You need to make sure you have a scorecard that reflects the full range of your values as an organization. You ought to be able to measure customer value. You ought to be able to measure financial value. You ought to be able to measure employee value. So at Vital Smarts here in our organization, we have four metrics that we pay attention to every single month, and if any one of them is problematic, then we have a problem. We don't consider ourselves successes. We have to know, do our employees see this as an enriching and rewarding experience? And we offer surveys regularly so we can collect that data. I don't care if you've got five employees in your organization. You ought to be collecting that kind of data on a regular basis, either through one-on-one interviews or through some sort of a structured survey, so that you know, are you creating a rewarding experience for them? The same for customers. You've got to do the same with your vendors and suppliers.
Great answer, Joseph. Marshall, you're up.
Well, I think that the best way to figure out where you stand as a leader is not where you think you stand. I think the most important thing is to figure out where everyone else thinks you stand. And one thing I teach leaders is get in the habit of asking that question, how can I be a better? Get 360-degree feedback. There's many ways you can get confidential 360-degree feedback. It's not expensive at all. Create an environment where you learn how you're seen as a leader by those important people around you. Then, after you learn, the important thing is not just to know where you stand. If you know where you stand but you don't change it, it's pointless. The important thing is to get better. Once you learn where you stand, then you need to focus on how can I change. And what I teach people is how to change, and a very simple process. I teach people to change by involving everyone around them, by openly acknowledging what you need to work on, listening to their input in a non-defensive way, and then a whole follow-up strategy of sticking with it, and you can, very simple process, measure improvement.
Thank you. Take it away, Jay.
That's a great answer. Okay, question five. What do you do to improve, increase, multiply your leadership capabilities? Let's say you do a little soul searching and you realize I'm short here. What are the steps entrepreneurs can take immediately to improve their leadership capability and performance? Brian?
Well, there's a factor that I teach, and it's very, very important. I call it the law of three. And I say that if you can take a list of everything that you do in the course of a week or a month, you'll end up with 20 or 30 or 40 different things that you do from the time you get in Monday morning and leave Friday night. If you then take a look at that list, you ask the magic question. If I could only do one thing on this list, which one thing would it be that would contribute the greatest value to my company? Now, the law of three says that there's only three things that you do in the course of a day, a week, a month that contribute 90% of your value to your company. And everything else is a support activity, a small activity, a fun activity, a frivolous activity, going for lunch, checking your email, reading the paper, and so on. So here's the key. Here's the key to answer your question. How do you improve, increase, multiply your leadership abilities? Is do more and more of fewer things. But do those fewer things better and better and spend more and more time on them. And that alone sets the example. It enables you to achieve results. It enables you to execute. It enables you to move to the front of your company. It enables you to make a maximum contribution. It sets a high standard. And if you don't do those three things, everything else you do is largely irrelevant to your business.
Very interesting answer. Sam, it's your turn.
We need to move to a totally new level of thinking. So I have three steps that I would like to suggest. And step one, you've got to admit that you're not the leader that you have the potential to be.
Okay.
And that you can be at least twice as effective as you are now. If you can't come clean in that way, don't even bother to listen to the next two steps.
Okay.
It's going to be a waste of time. In fact, you just might as well turn this broadcast off right now because you're listening, nodding your head, and saying, "Oh yeah, I do that." Of course, you know, when I coach, you know what the biggest problem is? It's the D word, denial, right?
Okay.
I'm sure you guys run into the same thing. Oh, I'm sure I could be better, but. Well, anyway, so step one is, you got to stand up and say, I'm a problem. Step two, and then step two is get feedback. You know, get feedback on how your people see you because, you know, as I said before, your effectiveness as a leader is a direct function of the impact you're having. You got to find out what that impact is so that you then can make a choice. See, people sometimes say to me, well, what if people say you're not a good listener? What do you do? You go to class and you go and take a course on listening. Say no, you take that information and you decide what you're going to do about it. You may choose to say, look, I'm not going to do anything about that. I choose not to act in response to that feedback. But we always are going to make adult choices, but step two has got to be we need a benchmark. How can we improve? How can we get better as a leader if we don't know where we are now? And that's what the feedback does. It gives us that benchmark. Step three. Is get help. Get help. You know, good books on leadership, listen to CDs in your car, leadership development programs, and, you know, the best of all, if you can afford it, is a coach. I know you guys do this too, and I just have come to believe, you know, when I'm in front of 20 people teaching leadership, I figure if 5% of what I'm saying transfers, we've had a successful seminar.
Interesting.
When I'm coaching, I'm looking for 50%.
On one-on-one.
The one-on-one coaching is 50%. Now, that's why also, and I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I'll mention my website, AskSamDeep.com, because what I've done on AskSamDeep.com is I put those lists you talk about, except they're brand-new, fresh lists, and each week a new one comes out. And it's a 10-minute read, and in 6 months you'll think you've had an MBA program.
Very, very good answer, Sam. Thanks. Fran? What's your position?
Here's one thing I think we've fallen short on. We haven't talked about one's product or service. And the number one point of leadership is make sure that you are offering a product or service that has great value. So many people don't care about the value of the product or service as long as somebody will buy it for a while. Maybe I can trick them. You've got to have products, and you've got, as a leader, you've got to be concerned with that. And you've got to be the one, because if you don't have that, all this other conversation we're having makes no difference. We need to emphasize not the things, but the quality. Now, you know, everybody talks about once you get the product and the, you know, the hardest thing to do, Jay, after you have a good product and a good service?
What?
The hardest thing to do that nobody wants to do is make a sale. But nobody wants to talk about that. They want to talk about small business. Well, you know, you need to have an accounting system, a bookkeeping system. You need to get incorporated. You need to get all this stuff. But you know that small business entrepreneur who's just started, whether it's a bakery shop or whether it's he's a plumber or a builder or a carpenter or whatever it might be. Their first thing they got to have, Jay, is what? A customer.
You're right.
They've got, and we gloss over that. We talk about all these other principles of business and all the stuff, and we go to Harvard and we go to Stanford. My son went to Harvard, graduated with great grades. He learned more in the first 30 days back here than he ever learned in two years of Harvard.
Hmm.
It was all theory. They don't even teach a course on selling. They don't even teach a course on bringing quality products and building value. It doesn't happen.
Great answer. Jeffrey?
Well, I think there's three or four things that I think people ought to do, and I don't think many of them do it often enough. I once met a guy who was quite successful in his career, and I said, "What do you do?" And he said, "I do two things, and I would recommend both of these, and then I'll have a couple more." First, he says, after I've gone into or had a significant meeting, not like, you know, a small interaction, but, you know, some meeting of substance where there's something of consequence has gone on, I sit down and reflect on it and make notes. What went right? What went wrong? What could I learn? What would I do differently? And the point is not that he's going to ever refer to those notes again, but the very process of note-taking and reflection causes people to be more attuned to and learn from their experience. I have a friend who says many people who think they have 20 years of experience do not. They have 1 year of experience repeated 20 times, and that's because very few people, particularly in small enterprises, but even in big ones, take the time to engage in this kind of contemplative reflection. You know, what happened and what can I learn from what happened? Second thing this guy did was he said he read a book a week. Now, that may be a lot in today's busy world, but let me suggest that one of the best ways of learning is to expose yourself to situations in which you can learn and learn from other people. And that includes seminars, that includes listening to things like this, that includes reading, reading books and magazines and newspapers and biographies of leaders and all these things. And the third thing I would add to those two would be to get outside your comfort zone. When people become surgeons, the first thing they have to do is, you know, make an incision. And it's, when people, you know, when the army and the military services in general, I think, are very good at understanding that the best way to learn how to do something is to do it. And, you know, if you learn to play French, learn to play a French horn or learn to, you know, ride a bike or learn to roller skate, all of that entails doing something that you're not very comfortable at and proficient at doing. And so I think it's really important for leaders of enterprises to make sure that they do things occasionally to stretch themselves, get them outside of their comfort zone, and do things that really challenge themselves.
Very intriguing perspective. Thanks, Jeff. Over to you, Joseph.
The very first step that entrepreneurs at the small grassroots level need to take is the same one that they struggle with, and that is recognizing that leadership is your job. Most people get their jollies out of their individual contributor tasks. They like coming up with answers. They like solving a problem. They like being the lead technician or the hero. That's not leadership. Leadership is about sitting back and saying, what behavior do I need from employees in this organization, and creating systematic strategies to influence that. So, for example, one of my first entrepreneurial experiences was as a co-founder of a small computer company in California. And it wasn't until probably 4 years into it that I realized that me writing computer programs was not the primary value that I added to the company. By this point, we had 6 salespeople, and I spent no time thinking about their sales productivity and how I needed to influence them and their product knowledge and whether they were actually selling to the kinds of customers that created the best margins for the organization and how we were leveraging their leads. And I didn't spend any time thinking about that because my head was all in the problems that were specifically interesting to me. And we lost incredible opportunities because I was negligent of that central task that I should have embraced. Well, I find the same with leaders in large organizations today. They want to be involved in specific problem-solving issues, and they are delegating often or shrugging off the job of influencing the behavior of all of their staff. They expect HR to take care of this. The second thing is, if you realize that leadership is your job, then you ought to be studying it. You ought to be investing a significant amount of time both in benchmarking against colleagues, talking with those who are doing it better than you are, finding out how they do it, asking yourself, how do you assemble an influence strategy to change the behavior of your people in your organization? Finally, you got to influence yourself. One of the ways you influence yourself is to ensure that the scorecard that we just discussed that you look at regularly is setting a mental agenda that draws you into leadership problem solving, not just technical problem solving. So if for example, I worked with the CEO of a transit organization at one point, had 40,000 employees across the United States. And every single morning, he would get up and look at train schedules and shipping records. And this is absolutely ludicrous for somebody at the top of an organization to be looking at something that people on the front lines ought to be solving. What he ought to be looking at is the larger questions that affect the entire organization's performance.
Very thought-provoking answer, Joseph. Marshall?
The good news today is there are so many resources available. I'm going to give you a few places you can start. One thing you can do is read. I mean, most of what I've done is written down. You can read it. The second thing is, just if you take me as an example, I have a website. It's called MarshallGoldsmithLibrary.com. I think first thing is start learning about resources. There are so many great resources. And listen, maybe watching me teaching Google executives is not quite as good as being there in person, but it's pretty close. And you know what? It doesn't cost anything. There's a lot of resources out there. Learn about books. Learn about the internet. And the next advice I have is you can get a coach. Getting a coach, I mean, you're not, I will be clear, the odds on somebody hiring me are reasonably slim. But you can get a good coach. And somebody send me an email. I can find a coach at almost any price point that's pretty good to help you develop. So you've got reading, you've got the internet, you can get a coach. And the other thing is, I'm a big believer in these network organizations. And there's 2 or 3 where small business people get together in networks with other CEOs of small business organizations and really focus on learning from each other.
Great answers. Take it away, Rich.
Question 6. What do you think is the most powerful action that an ordinary entrepreneur could take right away, like the minute this call is done, to begin transforming themselves into the most effective company leader that they can be? Brian, you're up.
All right, there's many, many answers to that. Let me give you a double answer. I teach a concept called zero-based thinking. In zero-based thinking, it comes from accounting, where you draw a line under all of your previous accounting decisions and ask the question, if I was not spending this money in this area, would I start spending it today? And in zero-based thinking, what you do is you ask the question, if I was not doing anything in my company right now, knowing what I now know, what would I not start up again, knowing what I now know? I call this a quink analysis, K-W-I-N-K, knowing what I now know. And you apply this in 3 areas. You apply it, first of all, to every person you deal with, inside and outside the company, and say, if I was not dealing with this person, if I had not hired this person, if I had not promoted this person, if this person applied for a job with me today? Knowing what I now know, would I hire them? Would I put them in a particular position? If the answer is no, the next question is, how do you get rid of this person and how fast? Because as soon as the answer comes up no to the knowing what I now know question, it means it's too late to save the situation. The second area you apply it to is every part of your business. Apply it to your products and services. And the third area has to do with any investment. And the investments are three kinds: time, money, and emotion. Is there any investment of time where I've put a lot of time, I've contributed a lot of time to this, and knowing what I now know, I realize it's not a good idea? If there is, how do you get out and how fast? Is there any area of money where I've invested a lot of money, and in retrospect, I realize it was not a good investment? Then cut your losses and get out as fast as you can. And the third area has to do with emotion, which is a very, very sensitive area where you've invested a lot of emotion in a career, a person, a relationship, a job, a product, or service. If you would not now start, how do you get out and how fast? Now, here's my final point, my second to last point, is when you have the courage, and it takes tremendous courage to practice zero-based thinking in your business, but when you have the courage to do it and you finally decide to stop, get out of something, eliminate it, afterwards, you'll only have one reaction, and the reaction will be, I should have done this a long time ago. Why did I wait so long? You'll feel a tremendous sense of relief and exhilaration. All the pressure and stress will be gone when you make this decision.
Fascinating answer, Brian. Sam, you're up.
Look at your second in command. Look at your leadership team. Look at everybody in your company and say, am I using you properly? In other words, are there things I'm doing that you should be doing, and there are things that you're doing that I should be doing? I mean, I know when I used to coach accounting executives, accounting partners, and I'd have them go to their assistant and say, am I using you properly? And they hear things like, no, you're not using me properly. Why are you making your own airline reservations? Or why are you doing? You'll be amazed at what you will learn. Because, you know, one of the great opportunities that I believe entrepreneurs have for getting the most out of their people is that everybody in your company tasked with what they are best suited to do and properly paid to do. That's the key.
Interesting answer, Sam. Fran, what's your take?
They may not have the capability of being a leader. And they need to recognize that. They may not have the capability of being an entrepreneur, and they need to recognize that, because some people don't care. A lot of people in business don't care. And if they cannot, in their heart of hearts, really go and do an inventory on themselves, do I really care about this business? Do I really care? Do I believe in this product? Do I believe in this service? That's where the core of it is. I can't give them a silver bullet to say, well, do this, 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 is, because they got to go search in their heart. And their soul, do they really want to spend the time to do every little thing? Do they want to spend the 12 or 14 hours it takes sometimes that they got to work round the clock to make it happen? Do they want to spend the time to develop relationships and trust with their business partners or employees or associates? Do they really want to dig down into that product? And is the product really valuable? Is it competitive in the marketplace? Does it create? That's what they got to do. There's no magic formula. I'm going to be a leader. I'm going to change how I, you know, what I read and how I think and so forth. It's got to come from your heart and soul. And there's so many people that can't get there. And if they can't get there, they need to go teach school.
Mm-hmm.
They need to work for the government. They need to do something else because they're wasting their time. Most people don't tell them this truth, because most people are selling them their ideas and goods. Do what I say and you can do all these things. And they go chase this guy's idea and that guy's idea, and it's never their idea. It's never their commitment. And they're not going to learn it at Harvard or Stanford or in a classroom. They got to go do it and see, woo, I love this. I care about this customer. I care about this product. I care about the product. I care about the people that are helping me build this. And I show it in how I treat them and how I pay them and how I share the responsibility and share the decision-making. I have an insurance company. We work that I started 6 years ago.
Okay.
We've knocked the cover off the ball in this insurance company. We have independent insurance agents that work under us. I don't pay them a salary. They're independent. They make a commission paid by the insurance company and so forth. But I've got to give them value. And part of the value I give them is that we have 25 support people here to help them in various areas, that from technology, from product support, from training and so forth. But they have me. And I say, you've got me 24/7 with all the businesses I run. I'm out in Pebble Beach a few weeks ago on the 16th hole with my wife and two of the best neurosurgeons in the world playing golf. We got a great match going. I get a call from Larry Sasso from Massachusetts. He said, Fran, you told me I could call you anytime. I said, I'm on the 16th. See, what's your problem? Well, I got a problem with this insurance company. I got $400,000 that I want to move over from here to a fixed index annuity. But the insurance company, I don't know whether I can get it worked through them or not. And you're the only one that can do this for me. I said, you're right, I can't. I hit my tee shot, hung up, called back to my office, got the insurance company on the phone, found out they could work. I'm walking down the fairway, I hit the next iron shot. I finally, by the 17th tee, I called the guy back. I said, this insurance company cannot accommodate you, but there's another one over here that can, and here's the number, call them, and we got it done. Now, that's what I'm talking about. Are you willing to do that, entrepreneur? If you're not, you're in the wrong place.
Great answer, Fran. Jeffrey, it's your turn.
I really recommend that people get down to a very molar, very, very concrete level of what are the behaviors that I need to do differently? Am I too quick to criticize people? If that's the problem, if I'm too critical and don't let them learn on their own, which is a problem, by the way, people oftentimes have with their children as well, then you need to be a little more willing to suspend judgment. If the problem is I'm not delegating enough to other people, so then you need to delegate more. If the problem is I'm not sharing enough of my hopes, dreams, aspirations, and fears with the people who work with me so that they can relate to me effectively, then you need to be more open and share what is on your mind, what is the information relevant to the business so they can help you make better decisions. So I think the answer is it depends upon what are the behaviors that are getting in the way and what are the behaviors you need to develop more of, and then go do less of what you shouldn't be doing and more of what you should be doing.
Jeffrey, great answer. Joseph, what's your answer?
My answer to that question comes from my colleague, Al Switzler. We've been business partners here for 20 years, and he always did this, and I always went kicking and screaming into it. I thought it was a silly thing to do regularly, and he consistently did it, and I think much of the growth we've experienced as an organization was a result of his discipline, and that was he was always thinking 2 years down the road. Now, I think the number two is an important number, because as an entrepreneur, when you're just getting started, some people might say, well, look, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we all know that you don't have time for that. You got to pay the bills today. The other important discipline is when you're hiring for important positions, always hire the person you'll need 2 years from now, not today. Otherwise, you create tomorrow's problem with the staff that you hire. One of the biggest challenges that entrepreneurs have is the crucial conversations that you have to step up to with some of the personnel who the organization is outgrowing.
Yes.
And oftentimes that's a mistake you made because you underhired. You ought to be hired for the personnel you'll need 2 years from now. That is, if you're the kind of entrepreneur that expects growth in your organization.
Fascinating answer, Joseph. Marshall, what's your answer?
Begin asking a question. How can I be a better leader? How can I do a better job of helping you? Begin asking that question to everyone around them. Really be role models. And let me give you something else. Don't just do it at work. Do it at home. This is something I started doing when my daughter was 11 and my son was 9. I'm very happy I did. I wish I'd done it when they were younger. I began asking my children a question. How can I be a better parent? Now, if it's worthwhile to say, how can I be a better leader, which I think it is, or how can I be a better supplier or a better team member or a better partner, which I think are all critically important, how about learning to practice it at home, too? How can I be a better parent? Maybe that's even more important. Well, the problem with asking these questions is we get answers. My daughter was 11, and she looked at me, and she said, Daddy, you travel a lot, but that's not what bothers me. What bothers me is the way you act when you come home. You talk on TV, you watch the sports, you don't spend much time with me. And she said, one time you had been gone 2 weeks, and I wanted to go to a party at my friend's house, and Mommy didn't let me go. I had to stay home and spend time with you. Then you spent no time with me. That wasn't right. Well, what could I say? Thank you. I said, Daddy's going to do better. I started keeping track of how many days I could spend 4 hours with my family. And by the way, during this period of my life, I saw myself as an entrepreneur, and I was working in a small business, and I was a leader. And by the way, you know how much I travel on American Airlines alone? 10 million frequent flyer miles on one airline. I said, I'm going to spend 4 hours with my family. 1991, 92 days. 1992, 110. 1993, 131. 1994, 135. I made more money the year I spent 135 days, 4 hours with my family, than the year I spent 20 days. What did I learn? San Diego Chargers don't really care about me. Took me a while to figure that one out.
That's a very good answer. We have one final question, and it's we call it the wild card question. Very simple. Through the lens of your expertise and your body of work, your methodology, ideology, et cetera, what's the one question you wish we would have asked you in this collection that we didn't, that relates to helping members on this call make their businesses more successful, profitable, more competitively advantageous now and into the future? And why is it important? And had we asked it, what would your answer be? What do you think, Brian?
Well, I read the question. I've given it a lot of thought, and I'm not exactly sure how to approach it, but probably from a macrocosmic or a high altitude sense, I would have to ask, what are my real values? What is really important to me in life? You know, they've interviewed hundreds of people who've reached the age of 100 or more. They've asked them, if you could change anything in life, what would you change? And they all had three answers in common. Number one, they say, I would have given more thought to myself and to what I really wanted in life, rather than just simply reacting and responding to the world around me. Number two, they said, I would have taken more risks. I would have taken more risks in the direction of the things that I wanted. I wouldn't have played it safe so often. And the third thing they said is, I would have taken more time to think. I'd have gone and sat and thought. I'd practiced solitude. And so I would say that the best thing that a person can do in life is to develop the habit of solitude. And solitude means that you go and sit quietly by yourself for 30 to 60 minutes with no music, no cigarette, no coffee, no interruption, preferably looking at nature. One of the greatest forms of solitude is simply looking at water. It's just simply sitting and looking at a pool or looking at the ocean and just looking at water. And it takes about 25 to 28 minutes for your mind to go calm, almost like silt falls to the bottom of a bucket of water. So if I could give people one piece of advice in the course of a busy life and a busy day, is to think about who they really are and what they really care about and what they believe in, and take some time every day, if you possibly can, at the end of the day or first thing in the morning, and just sit quietly by yourself. It's called the golden hour, where you sit quietly by yourself and you just get in tune with the very best that is in you and the very highest mind that is available to you.
They want to get a hold of you. How do they do that?
Just come to BrianTracy.com.
Thank you. On to you, Sam.
The one thing that appears, I believe, in so many different ways in every single book that I've been a part of is know your audience. That you're never acting in isolation, whether you're giving a presentation, whether you're leading, whether you're selling, it doesn't matter what it is. You need to know the other person and adapt your messages accordingly.
That's very powerful.
So that's
a great answer.
Thank you. But the one about the question you didn't ask, you guys were too positive. You didn't go negative on me. So I'm going to go negative.
All right, fine.
And here's the question I'm going to ask. What is the one thing that prevents an entrepreneur from being a great leader? I mean, I used to teach in the MBA program at Carnegie Mellon. I taught a course called Meeting the Challenges of Corporate Leadership. And at the introductory dinner, where they would bring new MBA students in, I was sitting at the dinner with Diane, my wife, and with four other students and their spouses. And this one fellow across the table happened to be, looked like he was Asian, looked probably Chinese, asked this question. He said, Professor Deep, what's the one thing that prevents leaders from being effective? And I told him, I said, it's a four-letter word that starts with F, fear. You know, John Pierce of the Electrical Machine Company once said, you hear this quote, this one's great, you can't lead a cavalry charge if you think you'll look funny on a horse.
And the most significant barrier, I believe, to great leadership is the fear and insecurity that prevents entrepreneurs from doing everything we've been talking about in these past several minutes. It circles back to the wisdom, I think, of becoming more aware of your emotional intelligence. That's where you have to start, through assessment, to training, and through the personal executive coaching we talked about before. But somebody once said, to know ourselves' disease is half our cure.
Yeah.
And I think if you can begin by saying, that guy's right that I'm listening to, there is some insecurity that gets in the way of me doing, whether it's resolving conflict I need to resolve, whether it's delivering the criticism I need to deliver. You know, the greatest problem with criticism in the world is that not enough it's delivered, because so many people are afraid. They're afraid to be truthful with regards to people's performance and with regards to people's behavior. And I think the starting point is to say, you know what, there is a little bit of that in me.
Thanks, Sam. Fran, what do you think?
I'll give you the answer. I'm not sure what the question is, but I really believe this. What success I've had in football and business has come from this philosophy, and it really was given to me as a high school freshman with a coach named Wayman Sellers, who was tough in me. And he said, Fran, you can throw all the touchdown passes you want, you can make all the great plays, you can date the prettiest girls because you're the quarterback, but the only way we win is if you make your teammates better. The focus cannot be on you. It's got to be on your teammates. I'll never forget it. The focus of my life is on other people. It's not on me. If I cannot make my teammates better, if my focus is not on them and give them the glory and give them the help and give them the stuff, we have no chance to win, because an individual cannot win. Business is no different. I cannot make it without my internal staff, without our customers, and it's about my staff and about my customers, and it's about my business partners. If I cannot make my business partners money, and sometimes I cannot, if I cannot help them do better, I don't partner with them. I pull away. And I partner with IBM and John Akers, and if you call John Akers today, we made IBM money. I found out that as big as IBM is, they want to make money too, and most people would put the IBM shingle up on the wall and wonder, why don't people come and buy all my goods, because I got IBM's label on them. It doesn't work that way. It's me being proactive to make IBM money, and all of a sudden it's given back to me.
What a great conclusion. Is there a way that they can contact whatever one or ones of your enterprises would be most appropriate for entrepreneurs?
They probably could just Google me at Fran Tarkenton, and they'll see the different things that we're doing that they could tap into, and they could tap into it freely.
Thank you. Jeffrey?
The question I would have asked is, you know, most of the stuff that I have told you and most of the stuff that I suspect all of your panelists are going to be telling you are things that at some level people already know or have heard before or have read before or have thought of before. And so I think the most interesting question is, if they know what to do, why aren't they doing it? That is the question. You know, why aren't they turning their knowledge into action? Why aren't they acting on the advice that they are getting in the various seminars and the books and the other things that they're doing to try to develop their leadership capabilities? I think the answer, I think there are lots of answers, but I think the biggest answer is giving up control. That I think people know that they need to delegate and share information. I think people know they need to admit mistakes to their colleagues. And by the way, to their customers, there's an enormous literature in marketing which suggests that the big problem is not, you know, causing an issue with your customer, but refusing to apologize and admit that you did something wrong. And that, you know, you can often recover from service problems and build even stronger customer relationships if you'll just to admit that you're wrong. But admitting that you're wrong, sharing information, delegating decision authority to people, asking for help, and by the way, even asking for help in terms of product design and delivery from your customers, which some companies have done a great job at doing, all of this involves giving up some level of control. And it goes back to this issue of ego. I think, you know, Many people, you know, believe that they can't let anybody know how what they don't know because they'll think less of them and things such as that. So I think the answer is that you need to kind of, you know, trust people, and then you get into this paradox, which is the only way I know if I can trust you is if I in fact trust you. And so if I don't trust you, I will never give you the discretion to see whether or not you can be trusted or not, and you get into this cycle of either virtuous or vicious, depending upon which part of the cycle you're in.
Thanks, Jeff. It's your turn, Joseph.
I guess the question that I would ask is, if there were one skill set that transcends business category, so the entrepreneurs in your audience come from a whole host of different kinds of industry categories. Yeah, very wide spectrum. But is there one skill set that all of them have to master in order to be able to succeed in their varied pursuits? And my answer to that question would be that the one thing that unifies all of them is the need to be able to think in systematic and effective ways about the challenge of influence. The most serious problems that most entrepreneurs will face will be human problems. They're going to be problems where somebody is not behaving as they wish they would. But if I could then broaden that, Jay, as we're wrapping up here.
Please.
I would argue also that's the central skill set that we as human beings need. You look at the problems that we face as a planet, and they're ultimately behavioral problems. We have diseases spreading across the planet because of human behavior. We have global warming happening because of human behavior. We have terrorism happening because of human behavior. And unless and until we can think in more robust and effective ways about influencing not just broad-scale problems like that, but the problems in our communities, families, and our enterprises, we'll continue to underperform and disappoint compared to our potential.
If anybody listening, and I would think there'd be a lot of bodies who'd want this, want to get more access directly to you than just the interview here, how do they reach you?
Well, our website is vitalsmarts.com, VITALSMARTS.com. We have a wonderful set of free online resources, newsletters that are great for entrepreneurs to continue their study efforts with.
Very good, Joseph. Marshall, give us your take.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you, let's say, my two favorite coaching bits of advice. My first one occurred when I was a young PhD student at UCLA. I was negative and self-righteous, and I was always down at the City Planning Commission, and I was just popping off about, you know, how great I was and everybody else's problems. And my old advisor, Dr. Case, called me in and he said, Marshall, I'm getting a little negative feedback about you. I'm getting some negative feedback that you're coming off as somewhat critical and negative and judgmental, and you always seem angry. You don't seem happy. What's the problem? I go, wah, 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 wah. I go into this rampage. And he looks at me and he says, you, Marshall Goldsmith, have discovered the city government of Los Angeles is inefficient. He said, what a stunning breakthrough. He said, I don't know if you know this, Marshall, but the guy pumping gas down the corner, he figured that out several years ago. Now, he looked at me and he goes, Marshall, I'm going to give you two choices. Option A, you could continue to be negative and whiny and argumentative and depressed and down and angry, and you're fired, and you're never going to graduate from school, and you wasted the last 4 years of your life. Option B, you can start having some fun. He looked at me, he goes, what's it going to be, son? You know what I said, Dr. Case? Let's have a little fun here. Well, that was some of the best advice I ever got in my life. Now, here's my best advice of all. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
And this is going to require the best advice every one of your listeners is going to get is not going to come from me. It's going to come from a little voice in their own head. Here's the exercise. I want everyone listening, take a deep breath. Take a deeper breath. I want you to imagine that you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. What advice would the wise 95-year-old you have for the you that's listening to me right now? I don't want you to say anything or do anything or write anything. I want you to answer two questions in your mind. Question number one is professional advice. That old person wants you to be a great success, a great leader, a great professional. What professional advice would that old person have for you? Number two, personal advice? The old 95-year-old you wants you to have a great life. What personal advice would that old person have for you? Whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of performance appraisals, that's the only one that matters. A good friend of mine had the privilege of talking to old people facing death. Got to ask him this question: what advice would you have had? Three themes come up in the answer from old people facing death. Theme number one could be summarized in three words. On the personal side, be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not next year. Be happy now. Learning point number two on the personal side is friends and family. Work is important. I'm going to help you. When you're 95 years old and you're on that deathbed and you look around, there will be no fellow employees waving goodbye. You start to realize these friends and family kind of matter. They're the only ones who seem to care a whole lot today. And then learning point number three, have a dream, go for it. And that's one thing entrepreneurs are good at. Follow your dreams. Go for it. You know, life is short. Life is short. You may not win, but at least give it your best shot. Business advice isn't much different. Number one, have fun. You need to create a spirit of positive enthusiasm, not just for yourself, but a contagious spirit that goes around you. Have fun and create an environment where other people are enjoying what they're doing and have this positive enthusiasm about every day coming to work. Number two is people. Do whatever you can to develop people, and you made a great point. Some entrepreneurial leaders don't see themselves as people developers. Big mistake.
What is the website again they should go to?
www.marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com. I give everything away, all the videos, the audios, the articles. It's all there. Get whatever you want. You can copy, share, download, duplicate, use any way you want.
All right. Well, thanks, Marshall. That was a great answer, and also thank you for sharing all of your stuff online, because I know how valuable those resources are, and I know that anyone who takes the time to actually check out those resources will benefit greatly. All right, so now it's time to go into summary mode and give you the best takeaways that I saw fit from this panel discussion. And I'm going to kind of start with why leadership is important. I hope you've realized over this course of this panel how important leadership is to an entrepreneur, and that currently I would fathom to guess that most of you who are entrepreneurs didn't really see yourself as a leader. But as Marshall Goldsmith had said, you have to acknowledge that you're a leader and then work to improve this area of your performance. And you have to realize why that's important. Why that's important is that once you've proven the concept, once you've made sales, what's going to determine how far your business goes is going to be your leadership ability. Not only is it going to determine how far your business goes once you've made those sales and you know that you actually have a proposition that your customers will buy, not only will it determine growth from that point forward, it's also going to determine whether you keep good employees or not, whether you give great service to your customers or clients or not. Ultimately, it's going to determine whether your business grows or dies. And if that wasn't enough, it also determines how much work you have to do in the business. The better your leadership ability, the more time you get off, the more time you have with your family, the more time you have to grow the business if you so choose. So really, when you boil it all down, the entrepreneur starts a business, but the leader is what grows a business. Now, one of the areas that many of our panelists talked about was also about self-knowledge. That you have to realize that you are not probably the leader that you could be, that you are not really living up to your leadership potential. And really, there's a couple of ways to really get down to figuring out where are the opportunities for you to become a better leader. And the first is to self-assess yourself, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Then also get feedback from others about your leadership, your current style, and what could be better about it, and also then study and learning leadership. So let's first talk about self-assessment. I think it was Jeffrey Pfeffer who said, if you know what it is to do and you're not doing it, the question is, why aren't you turning your knowledge into action? Why aren't you acting on the advice that you've gotten about being a better leader? Now,
I would tend to think that most on this call haven't really studied leadership. It certainly isn't as sexy as marketing on the surface, but I think hopefully this call, this panel, has illustrated how important and sexy it can be. And so what can you do to increase your leadership abilities? And that's a self-assessment check, asking yourself that question and really kind of exploring it. Another concept that was shared on this panel was knowing where your comfort zone ends and making sure to step outside it often. You know, I'm not by nature a confrontational person, and if I had my choice, I'd prefer to avoid all confrontation. So that's part of the edge of my comfort zone. But I know that for the performance of my business to improve, I have to step outside my comfort zone. I have to not be negatively confrontational, but when I see something going wrong, when I see someone making a mistake, when I see someone going down the wrong path, I have to interject and tell them that what my opinion is about how they're going off track, what can be improved, etc. You have to be able to lead yourself before others will be led by you. On the panel, we also talked about being a role model, and we'll get to that in a little bit later, but are you a good role model? You have to assess your own accountability. Are you accountable? Do you live up to the promises that you make? Are you consistent? Consistency, very important for leaders. What's your work ethic like? When you're working, do you really work? Remember, you're a role model. And do you care about your employees? Do you care about your customers? Do you care about your products? You got to really reflect on this, really think about where you stand on these levels, accountability, consistency, work ethic, and the caring that should be spread out through your business for all the things that you should really deeply care about. Another suggestion that was brought up on this call was by Marshall Goldsmith, and Marshall Goldsmith said, focus on how you can be a better leader daily. And actually, that's something that I've done for about the last year, where I just reflected on that question every morning. How could I be a better leader today? And by making it part of your conscious awareness, you will see the opportunities where you can be a better leader in the moment on a day-to-day basis. Also, Marshall Goldsmith shared another important concept, and that is projecting yourself into the future to when you're 95 years old and giving yourself your own advice, professional advice and personal advice, and really reflect on that. Because the more you have your act together, the more you're living true to your own values, the more that you are taking care of yourself, the better leader you will be. Another way to self-assess is to really start to keep a journal and reflect on your own leadership abilities and your own leadership performance on a daily basis, so that in the morning you're asking yourself how you can be a better leader. In the evening you're saying, how did I do? Can I do a better job tomorrow? What would that look like? And really, self-reflection is very, very important. Now let's talk about the second part, about getting feedback. Marshall Goldsmith also said this question, which I think really kind of is that one quick question that really cuts to the quick here, and that is, how can I do a better job helping you? If you asked your teammates, your employees, your staff members, your outsourcers, how can I do a better job helping you achieve the goals of this business, you'll be surprised at the answers that you get. It's so vital that you self-check, that you get that feedback from those around you. Another one was about really thinking about not only asking people how you can help them, but also asking people, what am I good at? What am I bad at? What do I need to work on? And if you can do it where they can provide their answers in an anonymous way, all the better, because this way they can really share with you what they feel is accurate and not be worried about your reprisals. I also want to mention, though, a couple other things about self-knowledge. Are you passionate? Do you really care? I mean, Fran Tarkenton talked a lot about that, about do you really care? And you really got to do a self-check to see whether you really care. Another important point that Brian Tracy talked about was, what are your three most important responsibilities to your business right now, and how much time are you spending in those? First of all, you should know what your top three responsibilities are to the business. What are the roles that you play in your business, and how much time do you spend in those roles right now? And really doing an analysis, you know, keeping a time log, which we talked about on a previous panel, so that you can really self-assess your own performance. We have a test that's in our programs that is called the Colby test, and we had Kathy Colby, the originator of that, on a previous panel. And we make everyone who goes through our program take that test so that they can see where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, so that when they hire people that help support where they're weak and don't hire clones that are just more of them and end up having a very unbalanced team. The idea, though, is that ultimately, I think, to kind of finish this section about self-knowledge, is two last points, both brought up by Sam Deep. He said, know your top three leadership skills and know your three weakest leadership skills. And make sure to improve your weakest leadership skills on a continual basis. That only happens if you know what they are. And one of the ways that Sam recommended that you find out what they are is by asking teammates, employees, staff members, outsourcers, if there was one thing that I could add to my leadership behavior that you would think would help us succeed more, what would it be? Because you'll get very specific answers to that question. I'll say it again. If there was one thing I could add to my leadership behavior that you think would help us succeed more, what would it be? So there you go. So now we talked about why leadership is important. We talked about the first step, really knowing yourself, knowing your performance, knowing where you're strong and weak. Now let's talk about vision, because that was a common theme that came up on this panel as well. The vision that you set is what gives your team, your employees, your staff, even yourself, hope and direction. You show them the future of what you want, what this business is striving for, and what they can do to help the company get there. The next point that I wanted to bring up is what Brian Tracy talked about, where he's really talked about dimensionalizing the vision. You know, he had this quote that he shared from Peter Drucker, which he said, Peter Drucker said that if you don't see yourself as building a world-class company, even though you're starting off on your kitchen table, you will never really fulfill your potential. So you want to build that vision into building something that is significant, the company that you're creating. And then Brian shared, you want to idealize the business so that you can really figure out exactly what that vision entails. And he gave a couple of questions. He said, if my business was ideal in every way, what would it look like? If my products and my services were ideal and they were the best in the market, most respected, what would they look like? How would they function? What kind of results would they get for my customers? If my business was ideal in attracting talent, getting the greatest people, what kind of people would I have, and how would I keep them, and how would I treat them? And if I was ideal, if I was the very best leader I could be, how would I run this company? How would I run my business? You answer those questions, you start to get a very clear idea of the vision that you're creating for your business. Another important point was what Sam Deep shared, the example he shared about how you translate that vision into a way to assess behavior. And that's really the key part there, is translating the vision into a way to assess behavior. And he told the story about Nike, right? And Nike's vision was to crush Reebok. And, you know, then once that was articulated, once that was clear, and obviously the vision was more than that, but that was the key element, then the leader could say, what did you do today to crush Reebok? That meeting that you went to, what happened there so that we could crush Reebok? So the idea is that once you have that vision in place, you can then start to reinforce it and dimensionalize it for everybody that's around you, holding them accountable to make sure that their actions are in line with the vision of what you're trying to create. That is vital. So that's vision. You know, we spent a lot of time on it on the panel, so I don't think we have to take it any further. And then I just had some miscellaneous notes about what great leaders do. You know, it starts out with really Brian Tracy shared a bunch of more tactical stuff or more about what great leaders do other than set the vision, know themselves, and really realize its importance. He said that they set goals. That's not only financial goals, but metrics, you know, what's our conversion rate going to be or how many new customers are we going to get? And I think I took some further notes a little later on about more specific standards. It's your job to set the standards. What's acceptable? What's not acceptable? Is it acceptable to come late to work because people stay later when they come late, or is that not acceptable? You have to set those standards. You have to create the clarity so everybody knows the rules of the game that they're playing in. You have to solve problems and make decisions. Indecisive leaders tend to ruin companies. So you can't be afraid of making a mistake. You do your best prep for making a decision, and then you make that decision, and you lead by example. You have to realize that you're the role model for your business. The next thing is that Brian Tracy also shared was to know how every team member contributes to the vision, right, to the company, to the purpose, to the goals, to the results that are desired. Another thing that Brian Tracy shared was the five areas to really laser in on and make sure that you're on top of. Being one, how many new leads is your business getting? The conversion rate of those leads, the average sale of a customer or client, the profit that you make per sale, or the lifetime value. And when you do that, you end up really, oh, there was one more. How much repeat business are you getting? Because repeat business being a function of the satisfaction that your customers and clients have with your business. Another thing that Brian Tracy shared was zero-based thinking. The idea that if I didn't start doing this a long time ago, would I start doing it now? And applying it to all different areas, applying it to people. If I had never hired this person, would I hire them now? And if not, you have to get rid of them. If with products, if we didn't develop this product now or then, would we develop it now? And if not, then it's time to slowly get out of that product and develop the products that you would have now. And same with anything of that you invest your time, your money, or your energy, or your emotions in. If it's not something that you would decide today to start doing, then you should decide today to start the process of stopping it. And I thought that was incredibly valuable. Listening was another big component of this panel, listening to the marketplace, listening to your people, and really taking that data in so that you make sure that the company is heading down the right path. Sam Deep also shared that you want to catch people doing the right things, and a great book on that is The 1 Minute Manager, about purposely trying to find people doing the right things so you can give them some acknowledgement, some encouragement, because that will feed them to want more. Let's see, what else? Another question that actually Sam Deep threw in the mix that I think is a great question to ask all the people that work for you, whether virtual or in your office, whether outsourced or full-time or part-time, is, am I using you properly? In other words, are there things that I'm doing that you should be doing, and are there things that you're doing that I should be doing? And listening to what feedback you get from that to determine, are you really leveraging the human capital that you have in your business? Understanding that you have to care about your customers, products, people, and results more so than anyone else, because you will always care most, and if you care very little, then what you'll find is that your employees care even less. This was a big one, and it really came from two different takeaways that I wrote down. I see one here, and I remember I wrote it down later on, but Fran Tarkenton talked about it, and so did Marshall Goldsmith, that at some point you have to shift your ego. That entrepreneurs tend to have a focus on achievement, which is why they're able to start a company and grow a company. But if you want to build a business, at some point you got to get more absorbed, more obsessed, more excited about the achievements of the people that work for you as opposed to the achievement that you have. Because the role of a leader is to help others achieve so that you don't have to do that work. And so, can you get excited about achieving less personally, but achieving more in your business by the achievement of your employees? And that's so critical. I think that one distinction is so powerful. And if you really let that marinate in your mind, I think that you'll find that you could do better in that job. You could get more excited about the achievements of others and you could try to let others achieve more and you achieve less. Okay. Marshall Goldsmith had a really important point, I thought, where he talked about what you should be doing at least once a month, and that is sitting down with every employee that works for you and ask them, you know, where are we going, right? Where do you think we should be going? So it's where are we going is really the vision. Where do you think we should be going is to see if the vision is off the mark at all and to make sure that you're in alignment with the employee. Where are you going? That's the second question. And it's really about, you know, their area of the business, what's going on in their part of the business, whatever they're doing, what's working, what's not working. The third question is, what are you proud of? And before you ask them what you're proud of, they're proud of, you tell them what you think that they're doing well. So I'm proud of you for doing these things, but tell me, what are you proud of? And he said that by asking that question, you really learn what motivates them, which is obviously important. If you want to have a crackerjack team, you need to know what motivates them, and that's how you find out. Then he said, four, if you were the coach for you, what advice would you have for you? Once again, that will give you more insight into really what this employee needs help with, that you can help them with, that you can coach them with. The next question is, how can I help you? How can I help you do an even better job? How can I help you be great at this? And once again, you'll get feedback. Remember, if you're focusing on their achievement, then these questions become very relevant. And then the last question is, how can I be a more effective leader for you? And those questions will give you such tremendous insight in the way to run your business. Next, Marshall Goldsmith also said that it's showtime every day, that you have to look, act, talk, and project yourself as a leader, and that sometimes you might not feel like it. Sometimes you might even be a little insecure. It might even seem a little phony, but that's part of being a professional, that you are the leader of this ship. You have to set the course, and you have to hold everyone else accountable and help move them in the right direction on a daily basis. It's showtime every day. You're the role model. You got to care. Another thing that Marshall Goldsmith shared was from Peter Drucker, and that is we've gone from the age of telling to asking. That because most of us have employees that are knowledge workers, in other words, people who know their area better than we do, we have to ask more questions as the dialogue in a dialogue process, as opposed to just barking out orders. And those questions that he provided earlier, I think, are excellent. Marshall Goldsmith also said that you have to see that your chief role is a people developer, that you develop people. And if you develop the people around you better, your business will do better. Also, to get mentors and advisors. He talked about assembling a board of advisors. That was Jeffrey Pfeffer. And I've had mentors my whole life, and they've certainly helped me really shortcut a lot of years off the growing of my business. And I've even been a member of some of those professional associations like YPO and Tech and Vistage when I felt it was important for me to really get more outside feedback. It can be lonely at the top. You can't ever surface your grievances to your employees, one employee about another employee, or really ask for employee advice from another employee. That's very dangerous, and you really need to have somewhat external centers of advice so that you can bring that advice back into the business and not do harm while you're considering options. The concept, though, that I hope really stood out on this panel was how much and how important it is that leaders get things done through other people, and that you have to build the capability of getting the best out of everybody around you. And that only happens with a lot of the different strategies, tactics, and ideas that were shared on this panel. Another one that came from Jeffrey Pfeffer was to really reflect and learn from the performance that's currently going on. And, you know, what went right, what went wrong, what could I learn, what could I do differently? These are very, very important points. I'd say that the very last point is about firing. And firing is something, I know this from my own experience just coaching so many entrepreneurs, that this is an area where a lot of entrepreneurs really fall down on. That in order to have an excellent team, you can't expect to hire an excellent team out of the gate. And that really, at the end of the day, some people belong in the team, some people don't. And the sooner you get rid of those people that don't, the better off you are. I've never had the experience personally of firing someone and then regretting it later. But I've had the experience early on in my career of firing someone, seeing the improved performance, seeing how much better everything was once they were gone, and wishing I would have done it earlier. And that's a very common experience because most entrepreneurs are slow to fire. There's that old phrase, hire slow, fire fast. And it really has some strong truth behind it, that if you hold on to the wrong people too long, you really do damage to the business. And so that wraps up this summary of what I think was an amazing panel on really not only providing you the insight of why leadership is so important, but how you can immediately become a better leader. And we'll see you on the next panel, and I look forward to meeting with the experts and you on our future panels. Adios.